Word on Today FM.
And joining us for the Culture Club today, it's Jerry Fish. But before we talk to him, let's hear a little bit of music. Jerry Fish and May Kay sing True Love Will Find You in the End from the new album, Dreaming of Daniel.
True love will find you in the end. Find out just who's your friend. Don't be sad, I know you will. But don't give up until true love will find you in the end.
Oh, that's lovely. That's the final track on the album Dreaming of Daniel. I love an actual record in vinyl and yeah, two sides and a track listing that you should follow from start to finish. Jerry, tell us all about this project, because all of the tracks on Dreaming with Daniel were written by the late Daniel Johnson.
Yes, I guess through this album, I reckon I've discovered I'm an obsessive, you know, so I'm obsessed with Daniel. I've been running Hi, How Are You Day, which is a celebration of Daniel Johnson that we have annually on his birthday on January 22nd. This year we're shifting it to January 26th because last year I think it was a Monday night in January. But Daniel was, you know, quite an unusual character.
Yeah, who was he? Tell us about
him. So Daniel Johnson is basically from Austin, Texas, and I guess in the 80s he made albums on his own with a straight to tape. So they're kind of strange, kind of lo-fi recordings, they call them. But he had a lot of mental issues, a lot of, he was bipolar and I think schizophrenic and all sorts of, he had a difficult time with himself. But consequently, he had no filter. And his songwriting had this amazing ability to talk about the rawness and fragility of being human. And I think just fell in love with the songs. I mean, he has many, many fans around the world. Who are as obsessed as I am. So I
did
guess,
you know him at all, did you?
No, I never met him. We had Glenn Hansard at the first one. Glenn had met him, and a few people have met him. I mean, he was also a massive fan of comic art, so Matt Groening was a big fan. There was a lot of great fans. I mean, Tom Waits has covered him.
Does that a concern for the album, for the sort of the cartoon type images on the album?
Well, the album, yes, he also was an artist, a visual artist, so they're all Daniel's. I guess his characters, he had this fight between good and evil that was kind of going on, I guess, in his head, and he put them down. Now I got a guy called Ricardo Cavallo from Barcelona, who's another obsessive fan, to do the artwork. Ricardo's very well known in Spain. And I guess it's just tying everything together. It's been kind of 5 years as a concept. And
yeah, because the day is the Hi, How Are You Day.
Yes.
So that's to help people look after each other, is it?
It is. They've set up in Daniel's name the Hi, How Are You project, and they're kind of educating young kids to look after their minds, you know, and to talk about things. And I guess new conversations around mental health. I personally don't think we'd have much art if we didn't have kind of neurodiversity. I think that's part of it. And I think, you know, in indigenous cultures, we were all considered all completely different. And I think that's the way it is, really, all these kind of narrowing it down. I don't know what service that does. I think we all need to take care of each other. It's a fragile world being human, and it's a fragile planet that we live on. So, you know, and I think with the internet, people are getting really affected now. So it's important that we talk about things, you know.
Funny, we were just talking about that very issue before 6 o'clock this evening. You're on tour with this album as well, are you? And is May Kay going with you?
May Kay be joining us on some of them. And May Kay is kind of a big advocate for the Free Palestine and looking after, you know, people. I guess it's great seeing her, such a warrior. I don't have the mental kind of health to kind of be taking those things on. And I think people need to be respected too, to kind of, you know, with their kind of, I think there's so much news and so much, such an overload and so much going on in the world always. We've got to be careful to take care of ourselves, you know.
How much did you enjoy putting this album together? It's your first vinyl recording in how long?
I run the record label, so I stopped making albums because they don't really feed the kids, you know what I mean? They don't put shoes on the kids' feet. So I haven't made a record in 15 years. But I kind of thought I really needed to put this down as a vinyl record. And like I say, it's a tribute to somebody that I deeply treasure.
And you enjoy doing it?
I love doing it. It was great fun doing it. Great band. We sang all the vocals the first time I've recorded live, and you can really sense that. It's a great live feel. And Kean Boyle, and co-produced the record with me, put a 13-14 piece orchestra on the record, and I thought, well, how much is that going to cost? But I bit the bullet and went for that. So it's actually an amazing production. So we've really received a lot of great responses for it.
But Dreaming of Daniel, it is. And there are full details available, I presume, on some websites that there is where all of the various places.
I'm on www.jerry-fish.com. Apparently that Jerry Fish is a real estate agent in California or something. So I've the hyphen.
And it's Jerry with a J rather than
Jerry
with a G. All right. Okay. Music will dominate your culture club choices. And tell us the story of the first single that you ever bought.
I still have it. I think it was cost 50p. I remember that because I remember the shape of the coin and kind of being kind of feeling that I was great to have 50p and then handing it over for a single in a record shop on the Warworth Road because I grew up in South London. So I remember the record shop I frequently visited, window shopping. But buying the first single, I guess, was a big step. You know, I was now a music fan, and it was Jeepster by T-Rex because I was a Mark Boland fanatic as well.
Why so? What was the attraction?
I don't know. I think Mark was just, he was so beautiful, you know, and so androgynous. And I think, you know, every teenager fell in love with him, you know. And I think that culture kind of really changed the way we are now. You know, I think with David Bowie and Lou Reed and, you know, all those kind of, whether a boy, whether a girl, you know, who knew, you know, who cared, you know what I mean? They were just so glamorous.
You're not the first, but Gavin Friday also picked, I think.
We have similar tastes and similar beginnings. T-Rex is, and still is. I think they really affected rock and roll massively. I don't think we would have had Prince without kind of, I think Mark Bolan was kind of part of that.
But Mark Bolan also got the TV coverage at the time, didn't he?
He was just so beautiful. I remember I lived in Kennington, and there was a big poster. He did a campaign for Keep Britain Tidy or something, and it was this massive poster. And I think I used to stand just staring at this poster for hours upon end. I think I was deeply in love with Mark Bolan, and probably still am.
This is Jeepster. Describe that type of music, because it's sort of like it's a hillbilly and country in there as well, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I think that, you know, later on I kind of discovered it's a roots music, you know, it's a roots-based boogie. And, you know, he kind of, but it, it, I mean, it still sounds so fresh and loose, you know, and maybe it was white people playing it, gave it that kind of different flavour. But it's kind of like, I guess, its roots are in New Orleans, you know.
You're the first person I think has used the word boogie in here in a long time, probably since B.P. Fallon, who used to love that word
boogie
entirely. Okay, favourite album. For somebody who loves music as much as you do, this I know would be a difficult question to answer, but you have gone for one.
I have. I guess it's just one that's just sticks out. I guess when someone asks you your favourite album, you just spit something out. If you think about it, you're lost, you know. So that would be Transformer by Lou Reed. Either that or the Velvet Underground first album. I think I really started to hear an album when I heard Transformer. And I think, you know, there's so many great records made around that time with David Bowie.
And what is it about Transformer by Lou Reed?
Just every song sounds so good. It probably is production and the quality of production and the clarity of it and the songs. You know, just Lou Reed and the journey, I guess, it takes you on, you know.
Let's hear a little bit of Satellite of Love.
Satellite's gone up to the skies. Things like that drive me out of my mind. I watched it for a little while. I like to watch things on TV. Satellite of love, satellite of love, satellite of love, satellite of. Satellite's gone way up to Mars. Soon it'll be filled with park and cars. Watched it for a little while. I love to watch things on TV. Satellite of love, satellite of love, satellite of love.
You mentioned, Jerry, that it takes you on a journey, because I'm just checking the track listing. That's track two and side two.
Mm.
That was in the days before Shuffle. That was when the selection of the location of songs in an album was probably more important than it is to many people today.
Yeah, well actually, hats off to Adele. She changed that because she did, you know, she made Spotify change their minds and play records in the order that they were, you know, put together. Because we spend a lot of time putting these things together, you know. But there's so many great songs in that.
I listened to Perfect Day, which is an absolute classic. Walk on the Wild Side, which is perhaps the most famous track from the album.
You know, it's a very rounded record. You know, it's a beautiful record. And I think, you know, it sounds like I live in the 70s now, really, to be honest. But I guess these were the sounds that kind of transformed.
Yeah, because for favourite band or artist, you've got Lou Reed and Iggy Pop and David Bowie, who was a co-producer on that Lou Reed album.
Exactly. So it was kind of, I guess, and they were all introduced to me by Mark Boland from T-Rex, you know, sort of was kind of this group. And I'm very lucky, I guess, to have met all three, you know, briefly. So... I remember I was in Naples, and we were in the Moshe Fisher on the U2's Europa tour, and I met Lou Reed. They actually had the Velvet Underground playing with them, you know, so we were on the same bill as the Velvet Underground, U2. That was pretty spectacular. But I met Lou and I said, I'd love to shake your hand, and he said, no, you just have. And that was it. But there, and same with Bowie. We met Bowie in Dublin, and I mean, Bowie was incredibly grounded character. I think, you know, I grew up with Cockney, so he was a real Cockney, and he had this clever ability of bringing, you know, as if he was tipping the cap to you, so it made you feel...
Because, you know, they say never meet your heroes, but in this case, was it good?
Well, meet them all, you know. Same with Iggy. I spent an evening with Iggy, and, you know, they're not incredible geniuses for no reason. So I think, you know, and I think with all three of them, very grounded and down-to-earth people. I mean, Lou was, I guess, a New Yorker, so a little different from the Detroit grounded Iggy and the Brixton boy that was David Bowie. But no, I don't regret meeting them at all.
Tell me, though, a little bit about a favourite band or artist currently out of the 1970s. Tell me about Viagra Boys.
To me, the Viagra Boys are the greatest band in the world at the moment. They're just pure rock and roll. I was lucky the year before last at the picnic. I spent the whole night on the stage with them, just getting that close. I've seen them in Olympia and I think they're coming back. They're just very raw, you know. Sebastian Murphy, the singer, he's tattooed from head to toe. And, you know, they seem to have, which I think a lot of the great bands today is like, they're like a commune or a collaborative, and they're just very witty, very clever, very unusual sound, you know.
Let's hear a little bit of Viagra Boys' Slow Learner. Viagra Boys.
Yeah.
Bit of a throwback as well, though, for a modern band, aren't they?
Actually, listening to that, I can hear a lot of T-Rex.
Yeah.
And Iggy and the whole thing. Yeah. I mean, I guess they have that kind of pure, they are pure rock and roll, and they're great wit, you know. They've got this kind of thing called shrimp tech technology, and they kind of sell it like it's shares, you know. And they're a live band. I guess the other thing is the great rhythm section that they have, you know.
Best gigs. There's two here we had to talk. First of all, tell me about the Beastie Boys and the Tivoli.
Yeah, I mean, that's phenomenal. I mean, I don't know if anyone even realised that the Beastie Boys were in Dublin at the Tivoli. I mean, Tivoli was a very small kind of rock and roll gig, I guess the same size as the Academy now, or smaller. A bit run down, you know, kind of had a smell of damp, you know, and it was crammed. I mean, it was kind of, we were probably breaking a lot of laws because I know the security got me and a friend of mine, shoved me in the back. The security doesn't shove the doors. And it was just, the whole place was dripping with sweat. And the B-Boys were, you know, I mean, again, iconic, you know. I've never seen guys leap so high, you know.
This isn't from the Tivoli, but this is the Beastie Boys singing No Sleep Till Brooklyn. Beastie Boys, No Sleep Till Brooklyn. Now, there's another gig you wanted to bring up. Well, I love the story behind this, because this is a festival that Emotional Fish played in 1990, long time ago. Tell us about it.
Yeah, Pugle Pop. I mean, I think it was a great time to be in a rock and roll, alternative rock and roll band. Nirvana were on tour with Sonic Youth, and we seemed to hit the bill with Sonic Youth a lot, and somebody pulled out. So Nirvana were on two bands before an Emotional Fish. Six months later, they were the biggest band in the world. You know, I often think that's what happened to Kurt, was they'd finished touring Nevermind, and then it became a massive hit, and back out again they went, you know, even bigger tours. And
did it happen too fast for them, do you think?
Well, I think after a tour, you're exhausted, you know, you need to go home and then, you know, just relax.
Nevermind remains a magnificent album, though, doesn't it?
But it's amazing how many people didn't notice it when it first came out, and then, you know, Smells Like Teen Spirit just took over the world. And so Kurt was on that, so he was there. And as I said, there was two bands before us, and then there was Sonic Youth played, Frank Black played, and then there was the Pogues. So I kind of, that was early days of the Pogues, so they were on fire. And then we had the Ramones, you know. So we were very lucky at the same time. The Ramones and the Cramps and, you know, these legendary bands were still touring maybe at the end of their career. But the Ramones, so seeing Joey Ramone and Shane McGowan backstage, then I didn't know who Kurt was. You know, we were hanging out, but that kind of made me realise I had a bit of growing up to do, you know, if I wanted to stay in the rock and roll business.
Let's go to favourite movies, actor, director. First of all, you've mentioned for us Jim Jarmusch's Down by Law with Tom Waits.
It's a great, great movie. Roberto Benigni, you know, probably the greatest clown in the world, is in it as well. And yeah, I love it. I guess Down by Law, it's a black and white movie. I'm a massive Tom Waits fan, so that's something I'll always go to. But I love a cookie kind of weird movie. I don't think there's enough of them at the moment, you know. Kind of, and Jarmusch made some amazing, you know. I think my favourite, I've mentioned it as well, is Delicatessen by Jeanneau Caro. So another great.
Tell us about that. What's that?
It's a very strange movie, but I guess they were the first people that kind of, you take a journey through a kind of a gutter system, you know, with a camera. So you kind of follow, the camera follows from the drain, you know.
Is that a 1980s movie?
I think it is. Yeah. And it's a retired clown, or it's a very strange story, you know. So
I'm vaguely remembering it now.
Beautiful, and basically a butcher, and I guess that old, you know, everybody knows what a butcher does at night time.
And then another one you have on the list, you love Wes Anderson's movies, particularly The Grand Budapest Hotel, which is a riot of a movie.
Yeah, I love a cookie movie, and I like a bit of comedy. I think, you know, I guess dark comedy would be my favourite kind of movies. So yeah, The Grand Budapest Hotel is fantastic. So, you know, you can watch it all the time, and they've got Harvey Keitel shows up, you know, it's fantastic.
Favourite play or musical or theatre show? You've gone for Brecht's The Three Penny Opera. For those who aren't familiar with that, explain it to us, please.
I guess we're in the same kind of realm with the Threepenny Opera. I mean, the famous song, I guess, is the shark has pretty teeth, yeah, you know, and keeps them shining white. That became a big hit, I think, for Bobby Darin. It's kind of, I think it's a Berlin underworld story, basically, the Threepenny Opera. And I guess I'm attracted to that kind of world, you know.
Okay. Favourite book or author? You have gone for something very different. The Crock of Gold by James Stevens.
Yes.
Tell us all about this, why this is your choice.
It's just, I think, an incredible book, probably because it's an Irish book and it doesn't follow... I guess it's a folklore tale that also brings Pan in, so it brings some of the European kind of things in. But it's the story of two philosophers who are so wise that they know what each other are thinking, and then they go into a spin. There's fairies involved. I mean, it's quite a psychedelic book, really, but the Crock of Gold is one of my favourite Irish book and probably my favourite book ever.
Okay, well, we have the audiobook, so let's hear an extract.
In the centre of the pine wood called Culloden, there lived not long ago two philosophers. They were wiser than anything else in the world, except the salmon who lies in the pool of Glencagney, into which the nuts of knowledge fall from the hazel bush on its bank. He, of course, is the most profound of living creatures, but the two philosophers are next to him in wisdom. Their faces looked as though they were made of parchment. There was ink under their nails, and every difficulty that was submitted to them, even by women, they were able to instantly resolve. The Grey Woman of Dungorton and the Thin Woman of Inishmagrath asked them the three questions which nobody had ever been able to answer, and they were able to answer them. That was how they obtained the enmity of these two women, which is more valuable than the friendship of angels. The Grey Woman and the Thin Woman were so incensed at being answered that they married the two philosophers in order to be able to pinch them in bed. But the skins of the philosophers were so thick that they did not know they were being pinched.
That apparently was published first in 1912.
Yeah, I mean, but it's quite psychedelic. I mean, there's a moment where a spider and a donkey have a conversation, and you realise that the human isn't really the most important thing in the world, you know.
Okay, that's James Stephens, The Crock of Gold. Favourite television shows? First of all, what did you grow up with?
We're back to the 70s, yeah. Top of the Pops. I mean, I just remember it was a religion, you know, kind of seeing Top of the Pops was, you know. And I think it's a culture we're maybe missing too now because, you know, you would have a favourite band like Mark Bolan or T-Rex or whoever you fancied, and you'd have to hang around and, you know, watch loads of other stuff that you didn't really like on the telly till they came. Because it was basically a TV show that followed the charts. And so, you'd watch stuff that you wouldn't be interested in, but you'd also discover stuff that maybe you didn't realise you were interested in, you know. I remember Willie DeVille, seeing him on Top of the Pops, and I think I had both my ears pierced that evening, you know, so impressed by Willie DeVille. So I think we're missing that in culture now, that people are kind of picking what they like and not getting to see what they think they don't like.
Did you ever make it to Top of the Pops?
You know, we were kind of one, I think we were quite unlucky, and we were one place behind the charts. I think Celebrate got in at 41 or something. So it was a top 40 chart position, so we missed it, you know. We did Japanese TV as a concept.
But would that have been sort of a career ambition for you? And was it actually watching Top of the Pops? Was that one of the motivations to become a musician?
I think so. I think culturally, Top of the Pops was everything to every teenager. You know, like I said, it covered so many genres and tastes that, you know, everybody watched Top of the Pops. You know, the streets were empty on Thursday night. You know, everybody went indoors to watch Top of the Pops, and families watched it together. So I think there were a lot of cultural aspects of the 70s, actually, when I think back, that were family orientated that maybe were missing too.
Yeah, but did that era, did you then decide you were going to be a musician, you were going to be an entertainer, an artist? What did you decide?
Actually, yes. Now that you mention it, it probably was Top of the Pops, you know, through T-Rex and Mark Bolan. But Top of the Pops would have been a massive cultural. I mean, everybody wanted to be a rock star. I mean, when I was a kid in the...
Everyone wanted to be, but not everyone managed to pursue their dream. You did. You went out and did it.
I guess, yeah. But I've actually just recently come back from Paris as a chat there. I was invited on a panel there, and I think I was there to show them what a musician looked like after 40 years of surviving and sticking to his guns. So, it's not as... I guess kids still want to be it now, but it's a very different career. When I got into the music business, Keith, the drummer with the Who, Keith Moon, he was driving Rolls Royces into swimming pools. You know, you could be
throwing televisions out of hotel windows.
You wanted could happen to you if you were a rock star. And in the 80s, everybody was in a band. We were all in bands. Everybody.
Favorite television these days?
I love Tommy Tiernan. Tommy's a great host, but I just think it's great that it celebrates people who we don't know, and also, you know, we're introduced to different people again. You know, I think that's great. You know, it's not about celebrity as such, it's about minds. And
there occasionally are celebrities, because actually the clip that we have is a celebrity, Colm Meaney. Let's hear Tommy Tiernan with Colm Meaney.
Did you ever feel stupid in Star Trek? Like, no.
Do you ever feel stupid in that hat? I'm gonna use that.
What I mean is, I often look at great actors, right? And you are a great actor. And I see sometimes they get work in some kind of dinosaur superhero movie, and they're there.
I'm looking for that one. I haven't found it yet.
And they have to say, "Oh my God, the Thermogodon is breaking down the defenses of the Thermododorobop." And I'm just thinking, inside they must be just counting money, yeah. You know. So I know
exactly.
So when you're in Star Trek, like, you had the pants on and the.
Like, no, well,
what did you have to tell people in Star Trek?
I would have some techno babble, as we called it,
so
yes.
So what did you have to tell them?
I can't remember. You wipe it immediately. I can't remember any of it.
I love how Star Trek became Star Trek. Real Irish.
I mean, he's the epitome of Dublin wit, I think, Meany. He's fantastic. I love him, you know. He went on to answer how Star Trek was a world which didn't have paddies and this, that and the other in it, you know. So I think I love Colm as well, yeah.
Okay, we always finish with a buried treasure, which is sort of a song, a band, a painting, podcast, book, movie, anything that you think people should know more about. And tell us what you're suggesting, which is a book.
It's an author called Angela Carter, and the book is called A Night at the Circus, which is no surprise to anyone that I'm a big circus fan, but it's just a great journey. It's about a young girl, a Cockney Venus, who's born with feathers on her, so she's got a nickname, Feathers, and she grows wings and as an aerialist in the circus. But it's such a journey. She's just a great writer. Again, a little dark, but I think she's got the circus owner. I think he can't see the clouds for the silver lining. You know, she's just got great lines of it with his optimism, and it's just a great read. She's a great writer.
It was a BBC radio dramatisation of A Night at the Circus, so let's just hear a minute of it.
It is the year of our Lord, 1899, and the whole city lies beneath feathers, flying feet.
Walser, get over here.
What is it, sir?
Hawkins is indisposed again.
What happened this time? Is it the drink or the women?
Both, in fact. He got pissed at a house of ill fame, overstayed his welcome, and the limits of his wallet.
You need me to bail him out?
I need you to take his assignment.
Which is?
An in-depth interview with Sophie Feathers.
I'm a serious journalist, sir. I don't do puff pieces on shallow show business non-entities.
She is the biggest star in Europe. This is a major feature.
With respect, sir, I'm a war correspondent. My passage to Cape Town is booked for a week from now.
So you've plenty of time to read up about Feathermania before you interview her at the Alhambra tonight.
I should be researching the conflict with the Boers.
The only Boers you need to worry about today are the ones who drone on about her act ad infinitum. Look at the size of them. Fact or fiction? Your job is to find out. Here's the file. You'll see the performance first. She's expecting you backstage at 11.
Is she fact or is she fiction? A question that vexes millions.
I think that's an appropriate way to finish.
Well, the faith of that journalist is something you really need to read about.
Oh, that's suitably dark. You like darkness, all right. Thank you so much, Jerry Fish, for having joined us today in the Culture Club, and best of luck with Dreaming of Daniel for the album and also the tour, which is going on with it as well. It's been great having you in the studio.
Thank you, Matt.
The Last Word on Today FM.